and welcome to The Real Writing Process. I'm your host, Tom Pepperdine, and this episode is the second part of my interview with Emma Newman. Do I need to say anything else? Not really. Here's the intro music. So, what's a typical writing session for you? Do you have a set structure of writing every day, or do you just work, you know, sort of Monday to Friday, and do you write in the mornings or afternoons? How frequently do you write and how long do you write for?
So when I'm in a first draft phase, I write 5 days a week. And depending on the project is what my word count goal is for those days. So when I was writing the Split World series, I was writing 4,000 words a day. So I would get the first draft of a novel done in 5 weeks on average. With the Planetfall books, it settled to 2,000 words a day. They were just harder to write. And also, when you're writing book four of a 5-book series, it's like hanging out with your old mates. It's, you know them all. You just have to figure out what's happening in that scene, and then you kind of write it. I'm not one of these people who say, oh, the characters took over and I didn't have any control. No, I am not like that at all. But it flows so easily that it was a lot less effort when I got bedded into that series. Whereas with the Planetfall books, they were so challenging to write in terms of incorporating the research I'd done, making sure I was paying my tax, making sure I was writing about things sensitively, as correctly as I could, as emotionally authentically as I could. That was hard work. The current book that I'm writing at the moment, my aim is only 1,000 words a day because I'm still recovering from over a year of not being able to write a sustained narrative. But I'm finding that I'm usually writing somewhere around 1,500 to 1,800 words a day now. I can feel that coming back to me. But one of the things that I find very useful about having a regularity to my schedule is that it also gives me an insight into when something is not right, when something isn't working, because I slow down and it gets harder to reach the word count. And I may not consciously know why that is until I step back and go, oh, actually, I don't know how I'm going to get to this next bit, or I'm getting to the end of my 5-chapter breakdown. I can't see where I'm going. I actually need to stop earlier than I thought and think about the next bit before I write it.
So word count really useful for you as a indicator of whether something's working or not?
Yeah, it's very useful from that perspective, but also I find it just helps me to have a momentum at that phase of the project. And also, this is what I consider to be my main job. Mm. I'm also a narrator. I also do other things for income. But this is the spinal cord of my working life. So I need to be able to make a certain amount of progress so that I can survive. And having that goal every day helps with prioritization, because there are lots and lots of things that I do and lots of concurrent projects. When I'm in a first draft phase, I have to have that as my priority, because I have to make sure that the majority of my thinking time away from the keyboard is devoted to that particular project. Mm.
Yeah. So when you're in your first stage writing, are you, you know, you said, you know, it's 5 days a week. Do you start at the same time, or do you try to start work at the same time? And how long, for your 1,000 words that you're currently working on, how many hours would that, you'd expect that to be?
So it's not so much that I have to start by a particular point. It's that after I've had my second cup of coffee, that's when I start writing. So if, for example, recently I did a huge audiobook and it was the length of what would normally be 2.5 novels, but it was a big historical nonfiction. And it was a fantastic project, but oh boy, it really took it out of me. It really exhausted me. And so I was starting later in the day, on the days that I wasn't in the studio, I was starting my writing later in the day just because I was so tired, because 6 hours of narrating is exhausting. And yeah, that, so other projects that I am doing will have a big impact on when I start, when my brain has recovered enough to be able to start that bit of writing for the day. And as for how long it takes, it can be influenced by how tired I am. I'm autistic, but I also have strong ADHD traits. And I've found that if I am very tired, my executive function starts to go a bit haphazard. And so I find it very difficult to stay on task and to stay focused. So let's say that all conditions are good. I'm not in the middle of a huge audiobook project and trying to shoehorn writing days in between several days at the studio per week, and that I'm not too exhausted by life events. 1,000 words can take me anything between 45 minutes to 2 hours, depending on how difficult the scene is that I'm writing. I've written 1,000 words in 25 minutes before. If it's something I've been thinking a lot about, that it's in flow, that I don't have to consider carefully exactly how I'm going to execute that scene. Dialogue also can be very fast to write. So yeah, I write it until it's done. I will probably have one cup of tea in the middle of it usually. And then the writing phase of the day is done by lunchtime, usually, hopefully. And then in the afternoon, I advance other projects or I do research for the book.
So when it's coming to the end of a writing session, is it that you're constantly checking the word count? Is that 1,000 words yet? Or is it just, have I got any tea left in the cup? Or is it lunchtime yet? Am I hungry? Or is it just, I want to finish this chapter or I want to finish this section. How do you wrap it up?
So it depends on lots of different factors. So like today I wrote 1,800 words when my goal was 1,000 because I wanted to resolve a particular thread in a conversation that was happening between the characters, and I just didn't feel satisfied walking away from it when I hit my target. So sometimes I will be like a few paragraphs off the end of a chapter and go, oh, I can't leave it like this, and I'll write over what I need to write because I want to reach that particular point.
Do you have a software that alerts you when you've written 1,000 words?
Yeah, I write in Scrivener. So Scrivener, you can set your project targets and it does a little bloop, bloop, noise when you hit your word count, and a little notification comes up saying you've reached your word count for the day. And you can set your project target dependent on the number of words that you need to write by a certain date. So if you overwrite on particular days, it can lower the daily word count that you need to reach to be able to reach your project target. Because I've been overwriting recently, I actually only need to write 607 words a day now or something to reach the target word count by the end of August, which is for this project, because I need to go back to my other one in September. But I don't take much notice of it. I'm not one of these people who say that you have to write 1,000 words a day to be a serious writer. Any kind of writing advice that starts with should or features should just needs to be thrown in the bin, and then that bin needs to be set on fire, and then it needs to be thrown into the sun. I hate all of that. The 1,000 word goal for me at the moment is a focus, a prioritization focus, and a way for me to feel any bumps in my momentum to alert me to there being an issue with something that I'm writing, that something isn't working. It isn't a, if I don't write 1,000 words a day, I'm a terrible person and I'm not a real writer. It's not a tool to beat myself up with. It has been in the past. But I'm just more sage about it now.
And do you have any particular writing rituals? So you said, you've got to have your second cup of coffee. You tend to write before lunch. Do you write with silence? Do you have mood music? Do you have certain items of clothing that you like to wear? Is there anything quirky within your rituals that you need to have?
No, they've all fallen away over the years. I realized that they were crutches. So when I wrote the first three novels I completed, which were not the Split World series, they were another series, the first of which was published and never should have been. But anyway, that series I wrote to music, and that was because it was based on a role-playing game that I had GM'd, and I had invented the world and I'd run the game for a couple of years, and I decided to write a trilogy based on the game. And so I played the music that I played in the background whilst running the game for my friends. And that helped me get into the mood. And then I just discovered that actually I couldn't and didn't want to be precious about anything that I needed, because as life became more complicated and more demanding, I had to fit writing in where I could. Because when I was writing the early Split Worlds novels, I was still working as a SEO copywriter. My God, that is a soul-destroying job. See, this is why I never ever want to go back to other kinds of work. When I was writing the first three novels based on the game, I was a teacher. And so I had already learned some skills in how to maximize small amounts of time to be able to write. But yeah, I started to realize that the only thing that I absolutely had to have to be able to write was coffee. I had to have my coffee in the morning. But that I need that to do anything. I'm just addicted to caffeine. Yeah. It's not just writing. I write in silence now. I like to have my own space, but I can write in a cafe if I need to. I've written on planes. I've written in hotel rooms all over the world when I had deadlines. When it's your full-time job, pretty much, you have to be able to write regardless of what is going on around you sometimes because there's a deadline.
Yeah.
So yeah, the only thing I would say is that I would probably write some really rubbish words if I hadn't had my two cups of coffee. Obviously I set my office up in a way that is comfortable, but is it ideal? No, I don't think I've ever found my ideal office setup, and I don't know if I ever will, but the most important thing is that the words get written.
Yeah. And with it's something that's come up with a lot of people, and we've spoken a bit tangentially about mental health, but is there any point during a writing project, and does it happen regularly, that you have a sudden belief that you're a terrible writer and that you're worried, like, why on earth do people employ me? Complete imposter syndrome. What am I doing? Has that ever happened? And
I'm laughing because that has never not happened. That is every single day. That is, it would be more apt to ask, have you ever had a day where you have ever not felt this way? Have you ever had a day where you've sat down to work and gone, yay, I'm a writer and I'm going to write things that people love? No, I've never, ever felt secure in my ability as a writer.
How do you get past that? Because a lot of people would give up because of that. But obviously you haven't. So what's your coping mechanism?
One of my it comes from living with what I thought was generalized anxiety disorder for 20 odd years. And it turns out I was just autistic and nobody diagnosed me. But in the process of living with what I thought was generalized anxiety disorder, I developed a variety of techniques that enabled me to still do things, even though I felt crushing terror or massive physical symptoms of anxiety, or I basically developed a way to overcome the mental obstacles, because if I didn't, I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't be able to achieve anything in my life. And in fact, I do a workshop on the techniques I developed at conventions. I'm thinking about doing it for YouTube, actually.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Where it's basically, I just did a lot of work over the years looking at when I found it very hard to write. I didn't write for 10 years because I was running away from writing after a significant success from my writing, and learning to overcome that fear, recognizing that the root of all procrastination behavior in writing is fear, and then addressing those fears directly. And then just having to do that for 15 years, you learn to see it as what it is.
Yeah.
And you learn to recognize, or rather, I shouldn't say you learn, I have learned to recognize it as self-sabotaging, and that it is mood. And as Gurney says, mood is for cattle and for love play. It's not for professional writers. You have to just accept that you may never feel like an accomplished writer. I've accepted I will never feel like I am a good writer, and that I'm going to be okay, and that this book I'm writing is going to be sold. There are no guarantees. I'm terrified that this shared world book that I've been commissioned to write will be the last contract I ever have. It's a very common feeling amongst my friends. But I can't let that get in the way of the work. Mm. I have to write. It is what I do, And I have come to appreciate and understand that about myself, that I have to write. And there have been periods in my life, one of which has been very recent, where I've looked at walking away from it seriously and thinking, I can't do this anymore, but I always come back. It always comes back to me. And I just accept it now as part of the job is accepting that I don't have to be in the mood. I don't have to believe in myself. I don't have to have any confidence in my ability. All I need to do is to show up.
Yeah.
And in fact, that entire workshop I wrote because I was so fed up of reading writers on Twitter back when I was really struggling to be a writer saying, oh, all you need to do as a writer is to just sit down, bum in seat, start writing. That makes you a writer. No. You have to do the work to get into the seat. You have to do the work on facing that fear, accepting that you may not always feel like a writer, that you will always have imposter syndrome. That is where the work lies. And once you can start to do that, then you can sit down and have the bum in seat writing experience. But for some of us, it's a longer and harder journey to get to that point.
No, definitely. And that's it's really interesting to hear how you've gone through all of that. And it's a very common thing I hear is that, you've got to put in the work. It's not just bums on seats, but putting in the work. And with periods of time where you may feel uninspired and you might have doubts about the writing, it's still writing your 1,000 words, because first draft, just get it down. It can always be pruned later. Or have there been more involved in uninspired moments where it's that literally you haven't got an idea in your head? Has that happened, and how have you dealt with that, if it has?
Yeah, so there have been two periods of my life where I've been unable to write. The first, this is once I started to write seriously. I guess three periods in my life, but the first period I discount because that was before I actually made a commitment to take writing seriously. So once I had made that commitment to myself, the first period was when my best friend died very suddenly at the age of 41. And I had just finished Planetfall. It was out on submission. I needed to write the next thing I was going to write, and I couldn't. There was nothing. There was nothing in me. There was just a void. It felt like half of my face had fallen off. She was my closest, bestest friend, and it was agony. And it was a very frightening time because I genuinely believed that I'd never be able to write again, because the Split Worlds novels were the ones I'd written those and read them to her every time I used to go and visit her, because she lived in London and I lived in the Southwest. I used to go and stay with her for the weekend and read to her for hours and hours and hours. She loved being read to. And I had just finished reading book three to her, and I only had a contract for three books at the time. And I embraced her in a hallway and she said, you can't die until you finish this story, this series, okay? You can't die. And I was like, I promise I won't die. I promise I will finish book five before I die, just for you, darling, I'll do that. But she died after book three. And I wrote Planetfall. I hadn't had the chance to read it to her because she'd been very ill. And I hadn't been able to go and visit her to read it to her. And I was desperate to, and I couldn't. And it was very frightening. It was a very frightening time because underneath all of the grief, and it was a profound grief, I thought it had gone. That fear never left me of this is it and what can I do? And then I moved publishers and I had a contract to finish the Split World series. I could write the last two books and I had to do it without her. And that was really hard, very, very hard. And then, of course, when Planetfall was published, there are elements in that story where people thought, because I mentioned her in the acknowledgements, wow, you drew a lot upon that personal experience of grief. And it was like, no, I just imagined that bit. I just imagined it really well because I'd experienced other kinds of grief and I carried over that authenticity. So, yeah, that was actually one of the hardest moments I've ever had as a narrator, because I narrated the audiobook version and it talks about her in the acknowledgements. And we must have done 20, 30 takes. And I'm a very clean reader. I make very few errors, and I just kept breaking down. And the director and the sound engineer were just absolutely lovely and were so kind. But that was one of the hardest things I've had to read. So yeah, that was the one time. And then the other time was last year, and the year before, more the year before. Last year, I wrote a couple of short stories, I think, at the beginning of the year. And that was when my marriage ended. And it was just hell. It was hell. And again, I thought, this is it. I'm never going to be able to write again. I finished Atlas alone in the first 2 to 3 months after we'd split up. And I look back now and I think, I don't know how I did that. I genuinely don't know how I got through that time. And I finished Atlas alone. I got through that. I edited it. And then there was nothing for months and months and months. And then I started writing a few short stories, and I have a Patreon, and I was writing short stories for that and for my newsletter subscribers when I could. But then there was a point when I just couldn't anymore. I had a breakdown last year that was a culmination of lots and lots of stress, both from the separation, things leading up to it, the fallout from it, and yeah. And life changing so radically as well. So this most recent time, I was thinking, okay, you've just got to come up with a different job then. You're going to have to go and write copy for terrible multinational companies again. And you're going to have to suck it up because you can't write no more. And audiobook narration is wonderful, but it is really, you never know when you're going to get a gig. There can be very big periods between getting books, and yeah, thankfully it came back, and that was scary.
Did the offer to work in the shared universe kickstart it for you, or had you started writing by the time that offer came through?
No, the offer came through several months into the drought. Right. And it was the first thing that actually made that bit of my brain excited when I got the pitch for it. And I accepted, and I was very enthusiastic about it. And then I had to sell the old family home. I had to move house. I was a single parent. The house move was horrendous. My son and I ended up having to share my best friend's tiny two-bedroom house. My best friend slept on their sofa for 3 months because the sale was so horrendous. Oh, gosh. It was such a stressful time. And then finally got into the house, got the most urgent demolition building works done. And then the pandemic hit, and then I had a breakdown. And so nearly a year went by since I had signed the contract, and I had to get in touch with the editor and say, look, I'm really sorry, but I'm not going to be able to deliver this on time. But it's an editor I've worked with previously, and he was a very sterling bloke. And he was like, I'm totally fine with this. There's a pandemic, and that would have been bad enough without all of the other stuff you've been through. That is totally fine. When do you need until? Which I was very grateful for. And then in recent months.
Well-timed breakdown. You know, if you're going to have it in a pandemic.
You know, I think you are entirely right, because I was supposed to go to Europe to be at a convention. I had other events lined up, and the ones I was doing months before, in the previous October, I was frayed at the edges. I was really struggling to get through a day at that point, and I had to expend an absurd amount of energy to survive them. And I just think I would have had a breakdown in another country if I'd carried on, and that would have been worse. So in many ways, the pandemic has been horrendous and has affected so many people's lives in so many different ways, and so few of them in good ways. But for me, there was a profound relief in not having to leave the house. There was a profound relief in not being expected to turn up physically to a location and be my best self, because I was literally incapable of it. And yeah, I still now, even though I'm much, much better than I was, and I'm writing again, thank goodness, the thought of having to do a convention or a public event really fills me with a lot of anxiety, because it's like, can I still do that? I feel like in some ways I'm a very different person to the last time I was at an event as an author, and it does make me feel nervous. It's always been the part of my job that I found the hardest. And it seems a very strange thing that you have a group of people who self-select to be alone for many hours of a day with imaginary people, and then you say to them, great, here's your book contract. Now please go and spend time in this room with hundreds of people and be on stage in front of them. It's like, this is not the group I self-selected into. I'm one of those really hermity people who just stays in the background and doesn't talk to people. So yeah, it's a very challenging part of the job, and I am nervous about going back to it, I must admit.
Yeah, I'll come on to that in a moment, because I do want to sort of talk about, you know, how to promote as a writer, but focusing on, you know, this amazing understanding editor and having a delay of a year, was there a moment through all this trauma, all of this dark time that kind of kickstarted the writing of, okay, I'm gonna try today? Was there something that ignited in you to actually go, let's start on this?
I'm just trying to think, because the only thing I could write for a long time was short stories.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to think if there was a particular time when I started to write again, or if there was like this light bulb moment. And I don't think there was. I think, if I'm going to be brutally honest, it was financial pressure. It was looking down the barrel of, can I survive another year where I'm not earning any money? No, I can't. So I need to sort this out. I can't write a novel. I can't even hold the energy of a sustained narrative in my head, but I think I can manage a short story. And I think I just started to write one day. In all honesty, I can't remember very well. I can't remember that very well, because I was probably still very ill at the time. I remember the sense of profound relief that I was writing short stories again. And it was very reassuring, because I had a short story collection published before anything else. And I've always enjoyed short form fiction. And it felt like I was almost going back to the start of my career and rediscovering the love of that particular form. And being able then to commit to writing one every month for my patrons, which were my only source of income for the entirety of this time, it gave me a bit more confidence when I started to be able to write one every month. And that was all I was capable of. And for the last few months, the last 3 or 4 months or so, I've been writing the novels I've been working on alongside the monthly fiction. But I've just made the decision just this last couple of weeks to pause the short stories for a while, because I really need to focus on the novel. And I had a chat with my patrons about it and said, look, is this okay? Because I feel you're supporting me and I feel I need to write a short story every month for you. And they all wrote back and said, no, you muffin. We're writing, we're supporting you on Patreon because we want more books. We want whatever you want to make. Just please go and make whatever you feel like you need to make. And we're here. We just want you to be able to do what you want to do, because we like your work and we're in a late stage capitalist dystopian hellscape. So we're here for you, buddy. And that was a really, really amazing realization, actually, was that I could take my foot off the pedal in terms of the short stories and put all of the water drawn from the writing well into these books, because it means now I can focus on getting the my own novel to a point where I can send a decent chunk to my agent. She can have a read with it. She can say, we need the whole book before I send it out on submission, or no, I think this is enough. And she'll start that process off, and then I can go back to the commissioned book. It means I can do that. And the sooner that can happen, the sooner I can escape financial terror. Yay.
So you had the break, you then started rediscovering your love of writing through short stories for your Patreon, and then through those short stories and getting a positive response from your patrons, you were like, I've got this commissioned work, I really need to get a start on that, and you've started that. And then this other idea just popped in at some stage around then. So had you started work on the commissioned book And then this little goblin just grabbed on hold of your leg and went, wait a second, personal project.
Yeah, I was like literally 22,000 words into the commission book and I was just coming to the end of Act One. And then it happened. And I thought, I've never stopped writing one book to go and write another, because that can often be a way to procrastinate on writing a book. That can be one of the shiny jewels that magpie brains go for. And I'm very aware of the failings of my brain. And I was thinking, are you just scared of writing this book, Em? You know, are you just trying to avoid this commission? But when I sat down and really thought about it, I thought, no, actually, I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm very comfortable with that project. It's something I've never written before, but it's not anything that I'm finding technically difficult. I've done a huge chunk of research for it already. I've got to the end of Act One. This is a viable point to pause and write this other thing so that you can get it out to your agent. Because that's the thing, when you're, it's like the contract management side of being an author is the management of the feast and famine cycle. And my cycle has been blown to hell over the last kind of 3 years, because I didn't write after I finished Atlas Alone. If my life had not blown up, I would have gone straight from writing Atlas Alone to my next project, probably the following week. And I don't know what it would have been, but because I wasn't hugely distraught, I would have known what it was going to be. And I would have just rolled into that. And then as the editing and publishing process worked its way through over that year to get Atlas Alone published, I would have had another book ready to go. And so by the point that Atlas Alone was reaching the shops, I should have, hopefully, if everything had gone and things hadn't gone horrifically wrong in my life, I would have had another contract signed already. But because my life did blow up, I didn't. And I've lost that rolling contract flow that you survive off. So I'm hoping that because I've had this other idea and I know I can write it faster than the other one that I was working on and then stopped for the commission, I know that I will be able to write a sizable chunk of this fast enough to be able to start that process off, so that hopefully that contract will be in the works. There's no guarantee it will sell. It took 8 months for Planetfall to find a home. You know, it could be a year or two before I have any kind of contract stability. So I wanted to get that off as soon as possible. So yeah, that's the side of writing, which sucks. But I say it sucks. Oh, I'm so sad. I have to write books for a living. How ridiculous. I am incredibly privileged to be in the position that I am. And I'm very lucky to have these kinds of worries. I'm very lucky that I have other, you know, skills that I can use to bring in money whilst I'm in this horrible situation in terms of mid-term financial security. I'm lucky I can narrate audiobooks and I can make things and I can do other things and I have wonderful patrons. And I can make YouTube videos and blah, blah, blah. But it's a slog. It is still work.
It does sound like you have the most incredible understanding commissioning editor for that shared universe. That
yes.
You can say, I need a year off, pandemic, completely understand. Yeah, personal life, completely understand. Yeah, I've got another idea for another book. And I'm going to pause your book that I've already paused for a year to start writing this other one.
Well, I haven't actually broke it to him.
Okay. There it is.
I mean, fundamentally, I have a deadline for the book.
And the deadline is before this podcast goes out.
I would not be talking about this so openly. No, I have a fair few months. I know that I can meet that deadline very comfortably now that I'm writing again. Okay. And that is the good thing about having recovered from this breakdown, is because I've written so many books now, like I'm writing my 11th and 12th books. In terms of, well, I mean, I actually have two other books that I've written that weren't even published. So these are, strictly speaking, my 13th and 14th full length novels that I'm writing at the moment. So I know how fast I can write. I know that I can get a book written. I know I can meet a deadline when my world hasn't ended and when there isn't a global pandemic. So I know what my deadline is. It's not till next year. I feel fine about that because I know that the beginning of September, I'm going to go back to that book and I know how long it will take me to write the next act. You know, I can look at it in terms of the diary. As long as a meteor doesn't land on my house or other awfulness, I know that it will be okay.
So with your personal project and your personal novel that is, you know, brand new university, yet to find a buyer, do you have beta readers currently that you will go to once that's finished for feedback, or does it go straight to your agent, straight to an editor for their feedback?
In the house I live at the moment, I share a house. We've bought a house together and split it into two flats effectively, and my best friend lives downstairs. Okay. And at the end of every day, I go and read what I've written that day to them.
Oh, wow.
And so that is a part of my process that I really enjoy and I really like. And also they are very hungry for story. I seem to have best friends that love being read to, which is excellent. That is the only person who will consume it in any kind of form, only by audio whilst I'm writing it. Once I have written the chunk that I want to write over the rest of August, I will edit it once. I will send it to my agent and that will be the next stage. I had beta readers for my very first novel that I wrote, and since then I haven't. I don't do that. I don't share my work widely. When I was married, I would do the same with my husband, where I would read a chapter at a time, and we did that with each other's books, but I didn't send them out to beta readers. It's also dependent on what kind of agent you've got as well. I had an agent for 10 years. She then left the industry, and I've got a new agent now from this year. But my previous agent was amazing. I could write my first draft, polish it, send it to her, and she would do a full edit. And then it would go to my editors or go out on submission. So I felt I had a very good beta reader in my agent, because she, obviously being an agent, was very, very, very well read, knew what would work, what didn't work. And once I had written like four books, I guess I had more of a sense of what worked and what didn't work for me. When I was writing my very first book, I was flailing in the dark. I was learning how to write a book, let alone trying to tell a story. Yeah. I was just learning how to get through that process and developing my voice and all of that kind of stuff. Now I just send it to my agent and get it out there. That's not to say that I may not write a project in the future and go, oh, I really am not sure about this. I'm going to see if somebody else likes it. And if I decided to write a book where I was writing about something that I really felt that I did not have a chance in hell of writing sensitively or correctly, then I would seek out professional sensitivity readers. But I haven't had a project yet where I felt like I've needed to do that. With the Planetfall books, as I was saying, a lot of it is drawn from my own wealth of trauma and horror in my life. Hooray! I had an awful life. It's given me lots to write about. So, zippity-doo-dah. It's one of those things where I haven't felt that I've moved so far away from my own personal experience that I would get it so horribly wrong. You know, that may come back to bite me at some point in the future. But yeah, it's, I guess what I'm saying is that I tend to write very closely to my own experience. And if it's not my exact experience, the core of it is.
So I
don't feel, and with the beta reader experience, I learned very quickly that sometimes you don't get the feedback that your book needs. Sometimes you get a lot of projection from other people. You get a lot of contradictory feedback. I mean, nowadays, I know lots and lots of writers. I would be able to approach people who are also professional writers, and I have beta read for some of my professional friends. So it may be a different experience now, but when you're just asking your mate from university who's never written a book in their life, you could get some really patchy feedback.
Yes. And so once it's gone through the edits, agent's taken it out, and you've gone through all the proofs, and it's finally out into the world. The question I usually ask is, how comfortable are you promoting your work? I'm not going to ask that. I'm going to say, how do you overcome the challenge of promoting your work?
Yes, you're entirely right. I hate every moment of it. How do I overcome that? The first thing that I do is I do everything that my publicist tells me to do. So if they say that I should do something or write something for somewhere, then I will. I must admit that over as my career has gone on, I've become much more fussy about how I spend my time with promotional stuff. But I think that's also a reflection of how things have developed as well. 10 years ago, I would have been slogging away doing the whole blog tour, writing 30 different articles to be featured on different sites. The world has changed. It's not worth, I feel, my time anymore to do that. I find promoting my books excruciatingly difficult, and that's one of the things that I'm very grateful to conventions for, because it gives you a way to have a reading slot that it doesn't require a huge amount of gumption to hear that there's a day or a 3 day program where they have dozens of reading slots and you just put your name forwards for consideration. That is very easy. I can do that because lots of other writers are doing that too. I could not even now go dream of going to a bookshop and saying, "Hello, can I do an event at your bookshop, please?" I couldn't. It would be no. So I have to depend on other people, like the publicists, a thousand blessings upon them to sort that out and to make that happen. But usually I will do some kind of book launch event, and that's usually in either a bookshop or a cafe. I will do two or three articles for very big sites online if the publicist has arranged for that opportunity. I will talk about it on Twitter, and then that's it. In no sense is this the way that it should be done. I'm rubbish at it. People who are listening to this, do not make notes of how to do it this way, because I'm rubbish at it. I should talk about it a lot more online. I should tweet about it more. I should talk about my work more in general, but I just don't. I think the thing is that I may be incorrect in thinking this, but social media to me should be social. And so I find it very difficult to say to people, "Hey, I did this thing," more than once, because that feels to me like going into a pub and saying, "Hey, I brought out this book." And if you do that like more than 3 times, people are going to be like, "Buy a beer or get out." And I can't let go of that viewpoint of social media. So I should do it more, but I just don't, because it doesn't work in the same way as a pub, obviously. Not everybody is online at the same time, blah, blah, blah. There are a million reasons to promote it more and better than I do. I'm just very insecure.
So I feel that there's going to be a pressure on, sort of satisfying an audience, but I'm interested in whether you feel in yourself you have a greater pressure to build your audience or a greater pressure to satisfy your existing audience, or if you feel a pressure on either of those at all.
Yes, both. I feel both simultaneously.
Are they both the same size pressure?
It depends on how you look at it. I am so insanely grateful to have any readers at all that I want them to be feeling very happy and satisfied whenever they read anything from me, because I feel that the kind of the informal contract that I've entered into with them is that if they give me their kind attention, I will entertain them. Or at least traumatize them in a way that is an enjoyable experience, which is mostly what I aim for in my writing. So if I've made them cry, but they wanted to cry in that particular way, I'm like, this is fantastic. I'm deeply happy that this has happened and awesome. But fundamentally, I'm going to say I'm a mid-lister. I have no idea how that is even defined these days, but in my mind, a mid-lister is somebody who has had several books published, who is able to make at least a large portion of their living from writing, and or enough of an income that it supplements their lifestyle. Because I know several authors who have been around much longer than me and have had many more books published who still have full-time jobs. And, we make different choices. I live a very frugal life. I don't go on holidays. I don't have any things that I do that cost money. And that's the choice I make. But because I'm a mid-lister, by my own definition that I've just said, I need to grow my audience to be able to have any sense of financial security. because it's getting harder and harder to earn a wage, earn a living income, I should say, not a wage, from creative arts.
Yes.
It's one of those strange things these days where, in some ways, it's easier than ever. We have Patreon, we have Ko-fi. I love both of them. I'm incredibly grateful that they exist, even though sometimes platforms can be problematic. And I'm aware that I'm very privileged to be able to have them. But there is still the precariousness of trying to pursue a life that is worth living for yourself. Like I said, I spent a huge, huge proportion of my life doing jobs that made me deeply miserable and were very bad for me. And now I've had my autism diagnosis, I understand why. And I would not have been able to continue. I can't do most of the jobs that people do without thinking because I can't cope with those environments. And for many years, I did try, and then I would get very ill and very burnt out and drop out of those jobs, even though I was very successful in them, because my brain wasn't geared up to handle that kind of stuff. And I understand that now. But that puts even more pressure on carving out this life that I've worked so hard to achieve over the past 10 years or so. So I do feel the pressure to grow my audience because the bottom line is, if I don't earn enough money to keep doing the things that I'm doing now, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble because I can't just get a job and go to an office every day because my brain doesn't enable me to do that. I can't do that.
No, I think, sort of this whole, sort of 18-month, 2-year period, I like the term the great pause that has been batted around, as it's been a period of reflection for many people for many reasons. And regardless of what the government says and does, I feel society as a whole has a greater appreciation of the arts, as that's what they've been consuming over the last 18 months to 2 years, when they've been furloughed and when they've had all this time, they've had to fill it. And the arts has been a massive part of that. And I feel that as things open up and as things get to a new normality, it's not going back to how it was, it's the new normality and whatever that may be, there will be a greater appreciation of the arts. And my belief and my hope is that you'll see greater engagement with audiences as they would have said, your books got me through this. I consumed your art and it helped. And I want to support you because this has been a difficult time for everyone. I've developed far more empathy for people who struggle and people going through uncertainty that I want to help provide you with certainty. And I want to subscribe to your Ko-fi. I want to subscribe to your Patreon. I want to engage with you. And also, people are changing jobs. You're seeing hospitality, which has treated people like shit on minimum wage, is really struggling because people are saying, fuck off. I don't want to be treated like that anymore.
And
I will find something else to do.
I was actually, it was one of the things I felt strangely hopeful about was seeing that and going, is this the mass strike that I have been dreaming of for
I think
so
it
many
is.
years now? Is this going to be the moment when we can actually say, no, this really is not the way to continue? If anyone has ever read any of my books, they know that I am so furious with the way that the world is, that all of my books are a commentary on how toxic expectations of society are, and the dangers of unfettered capitalism, and how it literally destroys people and destroys societies. And whether I'm telling that through a 1850s book with magic in it, and or a 5-book series with fairies, or future science fiction, at the core of it is still this rage at how things are. And so many of the messages I had from my patrons were just so incredible. And there were several people amongst them saying, you got me through, and just please keep doing this. And I feel so heartened by it, but I also feel so broken-hearted by the fact that the world is the way that it is, that we have people who dedicate their lives to easing people's suffering in nursing, in hospitals, in care homes, and are paid a pittance. And we have people who are creating films, writing books that are saving people from suicide and are struggling to pay the bills every week. And then you have people who are in the oil industry that are killing the rest of the planet and earning millions and millions and millions of dollars every year. And then people who run certain major consumer websites that systematically destroy swathes of industries so that then they can build a rocket to be in space for 10 minutes. There is something so fucking wrong with this world that is killing us. And, you know, I feel a huge amount of guilt that I can write every day. But then again, you pay for that in different ways. And I also know now, of course, as well, that I wouldn't be able to do a huge number of the jobs that are out there because they're set up for neurotypical people. And well, if you have sensory processing problems, screw you. It's you have to find your own way. Yeah. And when you're trying to carve out a life which is good for you and you feel guilty for it, it says something is very wrong with the world.
I'm going to sound very new agey now, but one of the things that the way I perceive the world is that there are tribal mentalities on various different scales, but when you meet someone who's has a similar worldview, they're part of your tribe. But in using the tribal analogy, you need storytellers, and storytellers are an intrinsic part of the elders of a tribe. There have always been storytellers. You can see it back in cave paintings. It's been a very intrinsic part of the human condition. And as you were saying earlier, you ran away from writing for a long time, but it's still an intrinsic part of you. You write, yes, it's a privilege, but you write because you have to. And even if it wasn't a financial need to do it in a professional way, you'd still be creating stories in some form or another. It's an intrinsic part of who you are as a human being, and that's an intrinsic part of being a human being.
Yeah, I agree. When you think about what do you know about the world? What does anybody ever know about anything happening in the world? It's if it's not through direct experience, it's because somebody else has told you a story of that.
Yeah.
And even your own direct experiences can be changed by the stories that you tell yourself about yourself. A story is so fundamentally important, but is still open to abuse in the same way that so many aspects of our society are. Who decides which stories are told? Who decides which stories get the biggest audiences? Who decides who gets to earn a living from telling their stories? And it isn't a lie to say that for a very long time, like ever, white people and predominantly men for a long period of our history are the ones that are being allowed to tell stories to a larger audience. And on a societal level, the stories that we are being told by the media about immigration and refugees and the use of the word immigrant and refugee and when we are allowed to use it or not use it in news stories. When you start to look at the world through that lens of who holds control over the stories, I do feel very despairing about it sometimes, but I also feel hope because we are now in an age where you can have 1,000 people throwing you $1 a month saying, carry on. Oh, yeah, I'm aspiring to that. That would be really nice. But, you know, you have people who don't know you personally, who have just read some of your work or watched one of the movies you've filmed on your own phone and enjoyed your work, saying, please continue to create. And that it's a group of people, it's a large number of people, not some wealthy landowner who will only be a patron of an artist if they paint them in their fancy clothes. You know, there are bits of progress being made.
Yes.
It's we're getting there in some respects, but in other ways, we're not. Sorry, I'm sorry if I've ranted. I get very angry.
No, I am
always angry. I'm like the Hulk.
I think we're just going to wrap up with two more questions, but it's been such a privilege and I've really, really enjoyed our conversation. But what I wanted to ask and wrap up with, it's my belief that writers continue to grow and develop their writing with every story that they write. So is there something that you feel that you learned from the last story that you wrote that you're now applying to what you're currently writing?
Hmm.
as someone who wrote a lot of short stories, it doesn't necessarily need to be the very last short story.
Yeah, it's funny enough, I was oscillating between, is it the last short story I wrote or is it Atlas Alone, which was the last published novel, and the last novel I completed. I think the only thing I've learned from those is that I need to level up before I can write a particular book I want to write in my future.
By level up, what do you mean? Because I felt that Planetfall was a massive level up.
Yeah, Planetfall was...
I mean, I love the Split World books, but... You know, Planetfall, when that came out, I felt this is important. The way that you're portraying mental health in this, this is a significant, not just in your career, but just as a book. So it's really interesting to see how, from that, what do you need to level up to?
That's very kind, what you just said. Thank you. I felt that Planetfall was leveling up in terms of craft and in terms of having faith in my ability to go very deep into one character, which I had been scared of before. In terms of leveling up to write a book I would like to write in the future, I don't even know. I just know I need more XP. Everyone wants more XP. There are never enough points. But I just feel like...
Is it a multi-strand story? Is it having like...
No, it's, I can't identify a kind of aspect of craft. I think it's more to do with my own maturity and my own ability to process and assimilate some of the experiences I've had in recent years and to write about them in a way that is meaningful.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about, oh, I really want to write a story about somebody who goes through a horrific divorce. No, I don't mean like that. I mean in terms of understanding and emotional maturity, I suppose, is the only thing that I can come down to. I really did feel when I was writing Planetfall that I was writing differently. The Split Worlds had a lot to say. It says a lot about patriarchy and it has a lot of stuff that I feel is important, you know, in terms of exploring feminism and the nature of power and abuse of power and the need to just sometimes really just wreck everything and start again for to have any kind of serious social change. Yeah. You know, those kinds of things I feel are worth saying for me. But with Planetfall, I felt like I was going somewhere deeper. I was writing from a deeper place within myself. And perhaps what I'm feeling is that I could do that even deeper, that there is something else that I could tap into and that it would write a more profound thing. I don't want to, that sounds really like wanky, but it's hey, I'm a writer, what a great word to use, but you know, I'm not that full of myself to think like I'm gonna write my great work and I just need to just level up. I don't mean that, something that is profound for me. Other people find it,
I think that shows great humility, and I think I have no doubt that you'll achieve it. And much like you said before, the good ideas don't go away. So it's whatever time that takes, I have absolute confidence that when you know it's ready, when you know you're ready, then it'll start to fall into place. And I look forward to it. I have one last question. Is there one piece of advice that you find yourself returning to when you're writing? Is there anything that you've heard over the years that resonates that applies to you specifically?
The thing I always return to is actually something that I don't know if I absorbed something from somewhere else and incorporated it, but it's one of the techniques from that workshop that I developed to, you know, get over your own fear and to be able to write. And the thing I always return to is saying to myself, I give myself complete permission to write absolute shit. Because it's really important to be able to release yourself from the pressure of perfectionism and to allow yourself to write without constantly thinking, is this good enough? Is this working? To let that go and to just let yourself sink into the story and sink into the characters. It can be very hard reaching that state. But I've found that whenever I start to feel very tense about writing, or if I'm really starting to get nervous about it, or all of the fears, the old dread comes back too powerfully for me to overcome it easily, then that is the thing that always comes back to my head, is I give myself complete permission to write absolute shit. And it always works. And there have been times when I've really like been so seized up with, I guess, a form of performance anxiety, even though no one's watching me, no one's going to read it until I decide it. But you get tangled up in your own fears. And the times when I have said, not only do I give myself permission to write absolute shit, I'm going to write the worst thing I can possibly write. And this is it. Right. What's the most awful sentence? And I start writing absolute drivel. You know, you get three or four sentences into this absolute dross, and then you forget about yourself, and then you can start to write. And that's been quite a joyful experience sometimes. And then at the end of the session, you go back and you delete those three or four sentences. If you want to have a laugh, you read them. If you don't, you just delete them. But you've got over yourself long enough to be able to escape into the writing.
That's great. And I think there's no better way to finish off an interview than giving yourself permission to write absolute shit. Emma, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been lovely.
And that was the real writing process of Emma Newman. If you'd like to find out more about Emma, please do check out her website, enewman.co.uk. It's very clearly laid out and has all the links to her social media, so it makes my show notes a lot shorter. However, I would like to make a specific recommendation to sign up to her Patreon, as it's pay what you can rather than a set subscription rate, and you will get access to all of her subscriber-only short stories, which are fantastic. The web address is patreon.com/Emma Newman. So again, very straightforward to find. Anyway, that's all from me. You can probably tell because the music started. So until next time, or until the world ends.
Time can never be your trusted friend or your sworn ally. No, it's the harshest mistress of all. And life is just a chain of moments spent, a thousand hellos and goodbyes. Maybe a love like ours can lead out its call. I will keep you near until the world ends and you are safe with me. I have this.